Stuart, what's your reaction when you hear comments such as Aboriginals didn't fight to defend Australia?
Well, that's one of the things that really upset me when so many of our people did fight in all the wars that Australia's been involved in and made the supreme sacrifice. Young people, you know, 17 or 18, 19, and they've never been given any credit or proper recognition. And we're only asking for respect on that question.
That's Stuart Murray in 1985. He's talking to an ABC reporter about black diggers being excluded from marching together under their own flag. See, Stuart was a Barapa-rapa yoda yoda Wiradjuri wamba wamba dadaroa man, and a veteran of the Second World War. And even before that interview, Stuart had been advocating for the equal recognition and compensation of First Nations veterans for years. It's a fight that continues to this day, and one of the people who've taken on the challenge is Pastor Ray Minikin. He's seen the discrimination black diggers face, how many were denied land under soldier settlement schemes, and paid less than non-Indigenous veterans. 20 years ago, the Cubby Cubby and Garang Garang man, along with a couple of his mates, Chris Carbon and Warren Morgan, started a project that'd bring national focus to the thousands of black diggers whose service was never recognised. They called it the Coloured Diggers Project. It was organised by mob for mob to remember the black veterans who fought for their country, only to return to the same racism and discrimination that was there when they left. Ray joined me in the Away studio to explain where the idea of the Black Diggers Project came from.
The thing is that I was just saying to a friend of mine, his name was Chris Carbon, he's passed on now, that and he was a white fella, that my grandfather fought in World War One as a light horseman, the 11th Light Horse, the Black Watch, a very, very, very big story which we need to tell sometime. And also I had two brothers in Vietnam, and I know when my eldest brother came back, he was in the regulars, the other brother was part of the call-up. And so when my eldest brother came back, he was one of the first over there with the Yanks, came back, and they had a march through the streets for the Vietnam vets. Or the soldiers at that time, and you'll recall that was the time when we were protesting against the Vietnam War here in Australia. And so as he was marching down the street, some woman came over and poured a bucket of white paint over him. Welcome home, brother. And so I don't know what was going on in his mind, but the very first thing he did is went back and signed up for another tour of Vietnam, and he did four tours. And it seemed like, you know, in my interpretation of that particular action of my brother, he was trying to say, well, I mean, I'd rather face bullets than the wrath and the anger of my own country if they're not going to accept me as a soldier defending their peace. So he went back and done another four tours.
You're sitting down with your mate and you're reflecting on your family history of service and the way that these men were treated when they returned. How did that lead to the Coloured Diggers March?
Well, what we decided, we would have our own first Anzac Day ceremony for our own Aboriginal diggers so that we could remember them, you know, lest we forget. And so we had a little ceremony in a little building there we used to call Crossroads in Redfern and George Street, and we invited our community to say, come on, let's acknowledge, honour and respect our own diggers, our own warriors. And what, it was a very good service, very meaningful for all of us. After that, we had all the local Aboriginal churches come together to do that, to make that ceremony really, really something very special. And after that, we decided we'd do a march the next year in the streets of Redfern there just to acknowledge our diggers. And so we went home, organised the whole thing from Redfern there in Redfern. And we went out and invited dignitaries and governors and whoever else, parliamentarians. And the thing that sparked it really, which was something that I didn't even expect, because in my mind I'm saying, okay, yeah, we can march down to the church there and have a ceremony again, a service, proper service to recognise our Aboriginal diggers. And we would probably get around 50 black fellas around there, you know, marching down the streets there saying, yeah, what do we want? And we wrote to the Minister for Defence at that time, Brendan Nelson, and we wrote to him as well as the national chair or president of the RSL. It was just normal courtesy to do that anyways, because these fellows fought for this country. And their response to our little march, and we had organised it, we thought about it very, very clearly, that we would not interfere with the main march. We weren't that radical. We just said that the Anzac Day is for everybody. And so we would wait until they finished their march and they all went away to the pub and played two up. We would then honour our own. And so we started around about 2 o'clock. And we marched, we was going to march at that time. Anyways, when we wrote to these two characters, they said in the national press or media, I'm not quite sure where, but they said that we will not recognise that march in Redfern.
Wow.
So they gave us the best marketing of our march that we could ever, ever ask for, and we didn't have to pay for it. So you can imagine the controversy that particular moment had created, and the problem it created for the government, but also the opportunity it created for us as Indigenous peoples here in this country to honour our own Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander soldiers. And when we started the march, there was the press came from all around the world. They wanted to know why didn't Australia recognise the Indigenous soldier. And when we started marching, I expected 50. We had about 800. We led the march down the streets to the church, to St. Saviour's in Redfern, to have this first ceremony there. And, you know, we wrote the liturgy for it, we wrote the order of service, all that kind of stuff. We did it to honour our soldiers. And we focused on, 4 or 5 things at that particular time. When we wanted to start this march, how would you honour your ancestors in a way in which would be which would give them that kind of prestige that we wanted to see. So we wanted to honour them, respect their services, and we wanted to make sure that their memory is always remembered. And our people came out in full force to make sure that their ancestors, their fathers, their grandparents, their uncles, their aunties were remembered, recognised at that first march. And there were a number of things that we decided that we wanted to do. One was to do the march and the commemoration ceremony ourselves. Two, we wanted a monument, but you can't call it a monument because it's too political and too controversial. Mm. And, you know, the white fella's brains can't come around the Aboriginal mindset and these things. How do you honour your people? But we call it a sculpture. we decided that we wanted a sculpture, and we went around and I found an artist who would do this for us. He lived up in Rydal, up here in the Blue Mountains, and because I wanted, if we're going to have a sculpture, the monument, it would be in bronze. Because we knew that it would last a long, long, long time. And so this is the only guy that we knew who worked with bronze in New South Wales. His name is Anthony Simmons. And so I went up and had a talk to him about it, you know, saying what I wanted. And he helped us design, I think, one of the most profound sculptures to honour the Aboriginal digger, because I said I don't want to see an Aboriginal guy in bronze standing there with a 303 rifle in the uniform with the hat on, saying this is our Aboriginal soldier. So what we came up with was these six dancing figures, male and female, in this inner circle. And the whole concept behind it was, this is who we are. Here we are dancing together. And we wanted to put this monument, this sculpture, and I did all the lobbying for it, down in front of the MCA, because that's where the ships took off to the wars. And what we were trying to say is that we put the sculpture there, the people will see this and saying, okay, we've been a part of this dance and now we're going overseas to fight so that they can continue this dance. And that when they come back from overseas and land back there in Circular Quay again, the dance, this sculpture would say, come, join the dance again. And we thought that would be the way in which you honour the true warriors of our people through that particular sculpture. We didn't get that one. But the one we got now is really important too, and that's the one that's in Hyde Park now, the bullets.
Tony Albert?
Tony Albert, yeah. Yes, yeah. The good thing is, you know, that our sculpture sparked all of those conversations and forced, you know, the institutions and the powers that be to actually make a decision or make a choice about the things that they hadn't done before. We also wanted to have a our own honour roll, so that our diggers could be remembered, but with a little bit of a difference. So for my brothers, it would have been, you know, Sterling James Minicon, Cubby Cubby, and Gurang Gurang. So that their tribes identified as well, or their tribal backgrounds. And I thought that would be appropriate for us. And, you know, we weren't worried too much about what the Gabbas thought. This is our responsibility towards our own ancestors to make sure that they're remembered, not just now but for future generations.
See, the inspiration for this project all started with the poem The Coloured Digger, written by a non-Indigenous veteran named Bert Berros. Have a listen to it.
He came and joined the colours when the war god's anvil rang. He took up modern weapons to replace his boomerang. He waited for no call-up. He didn't need a push. He came in from the stations and the townships of the bush. He helped when help was wanting, just because he wasn't deaf. He is right among the columns of the fighting AIF. He is always there when wanted, with his own gun or Bren. He's in the forward area, the place where men are men. He proved he's still a warrior, in action, not afraid. He faced the blasting red-hot fire from mortar and grenade. He didn't mind when food was low, or we were getting thin. He didn't growl or worry then, he'd cheer us with his grin. He'd heard us talk democracy, they preach it to his face, yet knows that in our federal house, There's no one of his race. He feels we push his kinsmen out where cities do not reach. And Parliament has yet to hear the Aborigines' maiden speech. One day he'll leave the army, then join the League he shall. He hopes we'll give a better deal to the Aboriginal.
For Ray, this poem captured what his project was all about, honouring our ancestors and drawing upon the warrior spirit. But he also says the early days of finding information about black diggers were tough.
I know when we first started out, we went down to the War Memorial there to get some information and stuff of that nature. The War Memorial had sweet nothing. And the only researchers at that time were two white people. One was Philippa Scarlett is her name.
Yeah.
And she's the one who really had the most information or the research on Aboriginal soldiers in the country, or possibly even on the planet. And there was another guy called David, I think his name last name is Huddleston, I'm not quite sure. But he did have an exhibition that was going around the country called Too Dark for the Light Horse.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to that exhibition and I was a little bit perturbed by it because as I went around and seen all the photographs and everything, all the research that he had done, it was a brilliant, brilliant exhibition. Right at the end was this one, the photograph of an Aboriginal soldier in the jungles of Vietnam. And I took a look and I said, hey, that's my brother. He was the unknown soldier. I said, well, hang on a sec.
That fella's known.
Yeah, I rang my brother and said, hey, they got your photograph here, you're an unknown. And he says, oh, no, they rang me. And he said he gave them permission to call him the unknown soldier. I don't think he minded. He was that kind of character. He didn't want to be known.
So here we are in 2026. And you've talked about some of those, the goals and the aims that you had in the beginning.
Hmm.
What are the current goals?
Well, the current goals haven't changed.
Hmm.
I don't think we've achieved our main objective yet, and that is proper respect for Indigenous soldiers, proper honour, proper dignity for their contribution. And so we have to do everything that we can to make sure that that's out. And I mean, there's the good thing is now that there's books there that people can read. There's a lot of research that has been going on, like, that was sparked by Philippa Scarlett. And people are now starting to look at that. We did have one old uncle from Tumula, but when he came in March with us, the very first thing that he wanted to do, and he was a veteran, he wanted to go back to his community and make sure that there was a roll of honour of all the Aboriginal people that fought or came from that particular community. And I mean, that's what I want to see, that every community has that, but also to transfer those names back onto the RSL's roll of honour, but at the end of it, just put that tribal identity there, you know, Gamilaroi or you know, whatever, Wiradjuri. That to me would be the greatest honour. And also, you know, what we've uncovered too, I remember finding out that there were some soldiers from Bourke, the Knights. They got a DCM, you know, Distinguished Cross Medal for their exploits. I mean, how many more of those? And another aspect of it too that was uncovered or that came through too, and another part of the research was the Aboriginal soldiers who fought in the Boer War.
Mm.
We've uncovered around about 10 of those already. And we had one that was buried out here in the Botany Cemetery in an unmarked grave. So, you know, the researcher who did that, Peter, he trailed all of that, tracked it all back to that one little spot. And I got the call and says, Ray, let's, we need to make sure we honour him by putting a proper gravestone over him. We did that. That was a tough task, but we did it to make sure that he got honoured. But I also realised, and I mean, I think we all realise as Aboriginal people, that there are so many graves, unmarked graves, of Aboriginal soldiers who fought overseas and have not been honoured.
People feel a lot more conflicted about honouring service of more contemporary wars. And I wonder, do you feel that pressure or that discomfort in the Coloured Diggers March?
Oh, yeah.
As we move further away from these, like, historic...
Yeah. Mm. And these present-day conflicts, it just goes to show a couple of things. One, these wars weren't created and never will be created by Indigenous peoples. That's the first thing. They're not our wars. And the bigger thing is that our people actually joined in and went and fought. And I can't get to the mystery behind all of that. I can only surmise that that's the spirit of the warrior in them, to say, okay, if you want to go over there and fight, I'll join you and I'll help you. You know, my grandfather was in the Light Horse in Palestine. You know, you wonder. Mm. They go over there and fight, and then they come back and they're not recognised. I think it does come back to how we recognise and how we honour soldiers in this country. We're not very good at it. I often used to say in the early days that if you want to look at a country that has done the recognition of their own soldiers, Indigenous soldiers, then go to New Zealand. Because you can walk into libraries and you can walk into museums and they'll have the Maori soldier there as a part of their recognition of that particular individual and what he has done. I mean, they can't escape it over there. Not only do they honour their own soldiers who fought in overseas conflicts, but they also honour the frontier wars.
Mm.
And so we haven't even got to that stage.
Mm.
And so you can see how far we've got to go. And, you know, I hope and pray that young people are listening and saying, well, I'll take up the charge, right? What do I need to do? Well, then just get out there, get your mob together and start marching in the streets. We still have the warrior spirit within us. We can't let that die. We've got to keep on fighting.
That was Pastor Ray Minikin, a Black veteran who dedicated much of his life to securing equal recognition and remembrance of Black diggers. He walked in the Coloured Diggers March to honour the legacy of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander veterans who fought for these lands.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.